You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 411. Today is Sunday, July 22nd, 2018, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by both Hammy and Kurt. And before we start, folks, please help out the podcast by subscribing, writing a review, sharing links on Twitter and Facebook. Alex Anthopoulos refuses to get bullpen help unless you do it.
Wow.
I know.
Now we might get serious. All the kittens and everything else no one really cared about, but yeah. Bullpen help.
You're coming back to the show.
Right.
Oh, yes, that's right.
We lost listeners.
Yes. They must have done something right because you're back, Steve.
All right, guys. In tonight's show, we'll discuss the team with Kevin McAlpin from 6A to the Fan. We'll look back at the All-Star Game and the Nationals Series, and we'll discuss the trades from this past week. But first, a quick break. We're very happy to be joined by Kevin McAlpin, who you can hear every day on the Braves flagship, 6A to the Fan, and the Braves radio network. Kevin, how you doing today?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we appreciate the time. So, Kevin, we're talking to you about noon on Sunday before the final game in Washington. Look like the game's going to happen?
We hope so. Let's keep our fingers crossed. They just rolled out the tarp, and it is – I know this is going to come as a shock to everybody back in Atlanta, but it is raining here in Washington, D.C. with the Braves in town. So let's keep our fingers crossed we can get this one in. Both teams are actually headed out of town. These guys Braves are headed to Miami, and then the Nationals are headed to Milwaukee. So getaway day for both teams. And after a rainout on Saturday, I'm thinking they're gonna try to do whatever they can to at least get five innings of this thing in today.
On the other hand, if it gets canceled, we sweep the Nationals coming out of the All-Star break.
Sweep them in a one-game series. That'd be a nice way to start the second half, right?
Exactly. All right, so Kevin, we got to start with the deadline. So I want your opinion, not on what you think should happen. What do you think will happen? How many players? What positions? What do you think is gonna what kind of positions are going to get added after the trade deadline?
Well, I think between now and the end of July, the Braves are going to be focused on adding help in the bullpen. You know, it's been kind of a revolving door there the first couple of months of the season. So trying to find some more consistency and maybe trying to find a veteran guy to add to a relatively young mix when you've got guys like Minter and Winkler and Carl, guys that, haven't experienced a full big league season just yet. So I think that, finding a veteran guy to add to that mix will be a priority for the Braves. I think you could also throw a starter in that mix as well. I wouldn't completely rule out the fact that this team may go after trying to find another starter to add to the mix. You know, if we would have had this conversation a couple of weeks ago, we'd be sitting here saying, you know, they got seven starters and only room for five. Well, since then, Brandon McCarthy's gone on the DL. You've had Max Fried go on the DL with the blister. You've had some guys that have had to miss some time. So that starting rotation that was really extremely consistent for you in the first half, it's got some little bumps in the road here lately. So I think bullpen is the number one priority. I think they're going to at least have some conversations about potentially a veteran starter and then maybe a bat off the bench. And look, this is nothing against Preston Tucker or anybody else, Ryan Flaherty or Charlie Culberson or whoever's not catching that day. But right now, you just don't have that guy like the Matt Adams that you had last year that can come up there and hit you a three-run homer late in the game. So I think that that's an area where maybe they look to try and get a little more pop off the bench as well. So those are the three areas I think they're going to explore. But if one is more, more of a priority than the other, I do think the bullpen is an area that they need to try to get stronger if they want to get over the hump and be a team that plays in October this year.
Kevin, the reports from the National guys were that the Braves were one of the six or seven teams in on Juris Familia. Now, I get the sense that the Mets front office is a total dumpster fire and they just pulled the trigger really quickly and, they didn't go back and look at other offers. Has there been any talk this morning around the clubhouse about the Braves' pursuit of Familia?
Not really, no. And look, I think if you're the Mets, the last thing you want to do is move a piece like that in your division. Now, look, it can be done, but Familia, one of the better late inning guys that we've seen, especially here in the NL East over the last handful of years. So, look, I think that if you're the Mets right now, you move Familia. I don't know how you don't at least engage conversations about DeGrom at this point, because you know, you're clearly sending a message that you're moving your best, you know, relief pitcher. I think it's only natural that at some point you're going to start talking about moving a starter or two, and whether that's DeGrom or Syndergaard, who knows what they decide to do. But that team is really you said it's a bit of a mess right now. I think that the Cespedes situation further proves that, where they bring him back, he plays a game, and now he might need surgery and be out for the rest of the year. So it's been tough sledding up there for that organization. I think they felt like some of the changes they made this offseason with the training staff and things like that were going to help, and clearly that just has not been the case. So really a tough year for the Mets. And again, I would be shocked if come August 1st, Jacob DeGrom is still in a Mets uniform. I think at this point you almost have to move.
God, if I'm a fan of the Mets, though, and seeing how little they got for Familia, I don't want them to move either DeGrom or Syndergaard, because it doesn't seem like they know what they're doing, or they're just dumping cash.
Well, you know, I know a lot of fans think that about there's 30 fan bases around baseball that say that their manager doesn't know what he's doing, or the front office doesn't know what he's doing. They do know what they're doing, but sometimes that maybe that the water is a little muddied with what their message is to the fans. And I think that's one of the things the Braves did really well during this rebuild. They communicated with the fan base. They said, look, we're going to blow this thing up. It's going to be a tough couple of years, but stay with us. And, you know, better days are down the road. So I think if you're going to do that, where, you know, you totally take apart a team, dismantle it, the first thing you need to do is be open and honest with your fan base and let them know, hey, look, we do have a long-term plan. We have a goal. But right now, you know, tinkering with a lineup or tinkering with a ball club, that's just not how we're going to get to where we want to be. So that I think what the Braves have done really well during the last couple of years is keeping the fan base and keeping guys in that clubhouse engaged as well, to let them know exactly what their plan is and exactly what the roadmap looks like for the next couple of years.
So Kevin, staying with the front office as a beat guy who's been there every day and through the Copy and Hart era and now in the Anthopoulos era, what are some of the biggest differences you see between those two front offices, just how they sort of deal with things day to day?
Yeah, you know, everybody has their own way of dealing with things. I think the one thing you notice is that I think Alex Anthopoulos and the rest of the baseball operations department, they trust their people. You know, they go out there and they let them do what they do. And there's a lot of communication. There's a lot of dialogue between the front office, between the coaching staff, between Brian Snitker. The one thing I love, I got to tell you this is going back to spring training. I thought it was very interesting that something Alex has really taken pride in is he met with every single player during spring training, let them know exactly where they stood, let them know exactly what they were up against. And, you know, there's some front offices that would say, look, you know, we're going to bring a certain guy in. Hey, we're going to give you a shot. You're going to have a great chance of making the ball club. When in reality, they have no chance of making a ball club. But Alex brought players in. He said, look, you know, this is where we're at. This is what positions we're looking at. This is what we think we can do with you. And some guys that flat out had no chance of making the team, I think that message was pretty much conveyed. So I think the communication that he has with everybody involved has been probably the biggest difference between this regime and the previous one. And again, look, everybody does their own thing. They do it differently. But I can tell you this much, that the players really appreciate, you know, knowing where they stand, and they're not going to, get the, you know, a BS, you know, song and dance. They're going to know exactly what their role is and if they have a chance of making the team. And if not, they're going to know that too. So I think that that's been great. And I think the players and the coaching staff really respect that about Alex.
So Kevin, it's been a rough couple of weeks for Ender. And I'm not even just talking about like his performance at the plate, but, you know, getting pulled from that game, you know, being sat the last game, being dropped in the lineup, you know, even again, we're talking on Sunday here, with Albies out, he still wasn't put back in the top of the lineup. Culberson's batting second. How has Ender's sort of state of mind been in the clubhouse since all this, you know, stuff's been going down?
I think he's handled it well. Look, you know, you go back to that game in Milwaukee a couple of weeks ago, and look, I think Brian Snitker did a great job of sending a message. Look, that cost him a run, and it was a 5-1 game there. You know, that could become a 5-2 game, and who knows what happens in that spot. Maybe the Brewers go to their bullpen a little bit earlier. Maybe it changes the strategy of that game. So you never know. The Braves could have gotten right back in that thing a lot quicker. It could have changed a lot. But I think Ender's done a nice job. Look, he's put in a lot of hard work in the cage, working with Kevin Seitzer and Jose Castro to try to figure out how to get things back on track. And look, he's still playing great defense. That's the one thing you can't take away from him. He's still, you know, he's a two-time Gold Glove Award winner in center field, and you know, he can go get it with the best of them. So I think that he's done a nice job of keeping his chin up. I think he understands deep down inside that, you know, he's struggled, and the Braves needed to do something at the top of the order. And, you know, it's just it's been a rough first half. But look, if you look at his numbers 2 years ago and what Ender did in the second half of the year, I think he was hitting close to 360 in the second half of 2016. So he's a guy that can get it going and can really, you know, sustain that for a long period of time. So I think right now it's just taking a little pressure off him. It helps knowing that there's other guys that can go up there to the top of the order. And I like the fact that Brian Snitker made that move. And I really like the fact that it's Ronald Acuna leading off. You know, between him and Ozzy, they really do a nice job. They feed off each other. I love having a switch hitter batting second with Ozzy Albies there ahead of Freddie Freeman. So, you know, those guys are going to get better pitches to hit, and I think it's going to benefit everybody. So long-term, I think Ender knew that it was coming sooner or later, and I think he's handled it extremely well.
Kevin, any ideas about the back end of the starting rotation? I mean, obviously, forgetting that they may pick up a starter, but with the – with the game canceled on Saturday, right, Fried is now not penciled in. Gohara had a rough start in AAA, so Fried ended up getting penciled in. Do you have any idea what direction the back end's going to take?
I think Fried has a little bit of an inside track over Luis Gohara. Look, last time out, like you said, the numbers at AAA were not great. The velo was down a little bit too. I think Gohara was sitting, you know, 93, 94. And when you recall when he came up last year, he was easy 97, 98, 99. So I think they want to see more from Gohara. I think they want to see a bigger sample size. Based on what we saw from Max Fried, he tossed 4 2/3 innings of no-hit ball. The big thing for him is just limiting that blister and preventing it from coming back, because this is something that has bothered him the last couple of seasons in the minor leagues. It's been a recurring blister issue on that middle finger on his left hand. So I talked to Max a couple of days ago. He feels like the treatment they've done and some of the things they've worked on off the field may help prevent this thing from coming back around. But when they do need that spot, and it does get interesting now because you push everybody back a day, you also have Wednesday off, so they really don't need that spot here for a while. But I do think Max Fried would have the inside track there over Gohara. I just think they want to see more of a sample size from Gohara down there at AAA. And I think they wanted to show that, you know, he's not going to be just given anything, that he's going to have to earn coming back up here. And again, I think that's why Max Fried would likely be the guy that would slot in that spot here for a while.
And Kevin, staying with starting rotation, does the team think that Sean Newcomb just started to get tired toward the end of the first half, or just, you know, he's pitching more meaningful innings than he ever has? What's the thought with his decline the last few games?
Yeah, it was a rough way to finish the first half, you know, having really three rough ones there. I think right now it's just a matter of he's not a finished product, you know, and I think a lot of us forget that. I mean, this guy's made less than 40 starts in the big league. So it's still a work in progress. It's still, you know, getting better command on the fastball. Curveball has not been there as consistently the last couple of outings. But, you know, look, you're going to have stretches like this. So I think that, you know, the last time out when he walked three in the first inning, but only gave up that one run, I think that was really a confidence booster for him. He told me as much a couple of days ago here in DC. So, you know, it's a stretch right now where you're going to have these periods when you're a young starter. And again, he's only been in the big leagues, 13 months. So not a finished product by any means, but they're still really excited about the development he's shown from a year ago to where he is now. That start where he gives up three walks in the first, that could have been a 3 or 4 run inning. Instead, it was a 1-run inning. He got some really big outs and big strikeouts when he needed them. So I think that's showing that both him and Fulte are really, you know, taking that next step this year and showing a lot of promise for the future. So I'm not worried about the last couple for Nuke. You're going to have those stretches, especially as a young guy. But for me, it's all about how you bounce back. And he gets the Marlins tomorrow night. So he's got to at least like his chances going out there in Miami at Marlins Park.
Hey, Kevin, let's finish up with this. So 68 games to go for the Braves in the season. How many games over 500 over those 68 do you think the Braves play?
Ooh, you're putting me on the spot here. So 68 games, we were all saying that 38 and 30 would be phenomenal. That gets you to 90 wins, if my math is correct here on a Sunday morning when I'm only on my first cup of coffee. They have a tough September. I don't know if anybody has looked that far ahead yet, but they've got a really, really difficult month of September. So I'm saying right now, you know, if they can get to the mid to upper 80s, even if they don't get to the postseason, I'm still saying that this is a tremendous step forward for a team that's going to have a ton of money to spend and has seen some young guys really emerge this year. So I'm going to say that they finish in the mid 80s. I'm going to say 85, 86. You know, is that enough to get you into the playoffs? We'll see. With that second wild card, it could be awfully tight. But right now, it's a matter of them having to navigate a very difficult September. And I think a lot of that will determine, you know, be determined by what they do between now and the trade deadline.
All right, Kevin, look, we appreciate your time. Good luck today. Hope you get that game in D.C. and safe travels to Florida. And we will talk to you again down the road.
Look forward to it. Thanks so much.
All right, Ham, before we get to the National Series, what did you like best about the All-Star Game festivities?
I don't know if I liked best. My biggest takeaway was that I didn't think I could hate Nats fans and the Nats and Bryce Harper more than I already did. And I was wrong. That was my takeaway. That's what I learned, my big lesson learned. Or at the very least, I think I sort of forgot how much I hate the Nats and the fans and Bryce Harper. So it was brought into great relief for me for the All-Star break. But I don't know. I thought in the game, Folty looked sharp. You know, he looked dominant. A lot of the pitchers looked dominant early on, except for a couple hiccups here and there. You know, that changed near the end of the game. But I thought, you know, Folty looked just as good as all the other pitchers out there. He looked like an all-star. At the plate, we didn't do great in the all-star game. And finally, I didn't love Freddie in the home run derby. He did great, and he really came on strong, but he never looked comfortable to me. I mean, I'm happy he was there. I'm happy for him. But, like, I don't think it's his gig. I don't think his swing and his style does well in a home run derby.
I saw a great tweet. I don't remember who it was from that said, yeah, but wait until the – hit it to the opposite field derby.
Exactly. He just looked like he was straining. So it didn't look great for him. And the fact that it was against Bryce Harper just left a bad taste in my mouth. I don't know. The game was sort of interesting. I thought the Braves didn't look great on that stage. They didn't look horrible.
Except for Folty. I mean, Folty looked great.
Yeah.
I thought.
Yep. He looked just as good as Scherzer, just as good as Sale, just as good as all those guys, if not better.
Yeah, I learned to kind of hate Bryce Harper's dad, too, which I didn't expect coming into
the
All-Star.
It's the gift that keeps on giving. I learned a lot of new things to hate over, or at least extend my hate.
But, you know, on the flip side, the great thing about how awful the Nationals fans were was watching how much Freddie enjoyed the boos during the home run derby and just how much Freddie and Folty were loving the boos during the All-Star game introductions. Like, the Braves were just eating it up, and it was really fun to watch.
Yeah. I guess I would boo too if I was 6.5 games back.
Yeah, it was sort of right. It was sort of like, what have you guys done again? I think Folty was really the exclamation point, which was awesome, sort of proclaiming him as one of the best pitchers in baseball right now. And it sort of stunk that Ozzie got pulled and Scooter Gennett hit a home run.
His home run.
Exactly. Freddie got pulled and Joey Votto hit a home run. So that was sort of a drag. But it was fun to just have so many Braves back in the All-Star game. I have to admit, I've really sort of tuned a lot of these All-Star games out in the past years. And I was watching a lot more of this one just so I could see the Braves and see what they did. I really wanted one of the Braves to have a big hit. Freddie had a couple of chances, it seems like I remember, and couldn't get it done. I think Ozzie maybe had some runners on as well. But yeah, I love that Bryce Harper won, but immediately it was like he cheated. He and his father cheated.
I know.
Because they did. I don't even know if they did, but I'm going with that deep state theory that they did.
Well,
in
fairness, they really didn't wait for the, you know, the hits to drop.
They waited for the ump's hand to come up. I mean, they went back to the tape. The ump's hand came up every time before they threw the pitch. They weren't
really. Is that true?
Yeah. He wasn't looking at if they had landed. There was an ump behind the plate, and his hand would hold up. And then he'd put it back down. And that was when you could throw your pitch again. I mean, they were right up against it. They didn't cheat. They were going off the ump. So if anybody cheated, it was the ump.
Come on, right. Ham. I mean, I think
the umps cheat. Let's go with that storyline.
Sure.
All right, guys. So only two games this weekend in D.C. with the rain out on Saturday. So Friday night's game was just a great way to start the second half. Anibal being steady, Acuna, you know, newly placed in the one spot, going bonkers, Freeman driving in runs, knocking out Strasburg. And the whole, I don't know if you guys watched it. I don't know if you were watching Friday night, but the Scherzer-Strasburg friction in the dugout
was
just so great.
Can we figure that he just said, in this situation, you got to go longer? I mean, is that, you got to give us more? I mean,
I think it was even more innocuous than that. I think Scherzer was just like, hey, man, good game.
Or, yeah,
hey,
they
man,
got they got you again, or yeah, or something like that, you know.
And Strasburg just like blew him off, and Scherzer was like, don't leave me hanging, jerk. Yeah. You got to be a better teammate. I really think that's what it was.
Fun.
Yes. It was
good.
It was
for them.
Yeah.
I'm happy for them.
So, guys, anything to add? Oh, yeah. No, sorry. And then, of course, Sunday's game, which was promising. You know, Fulte struggled at first, but then really bared down. And then the game just became an ugly, ugly reminder of how lacking the bullpen is and how Snitker just gives up and just starts throwing Luke Jackson out there.
Yeah. He runs out of options pretty quickly.
And I know his options are limited. I get it. But taking Fulte out and putting Sam Freeman in just to get the lefty-lefty against Harper, it was so obvious how that was going to turn out.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a Shane Carl game. And then it becomes a Luke Jackson game. And it was just a nightmare. Really.
Yeah, I guess the only it's which I hate because I said it, I mean, it's one of those things. Well, if they had told you blood and minima, but if, you know, I mean, you face Strasburg and
said,
Scherzer.
Yeah.
And you split. I mean, I'm sure that anybody would have taken that. And I can't believe I just said that. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. So
at the same
looked
time,
good. And yeah. I mean, he struggled. He didn't look great, but he you know, his velocity sort of stayed up. He gutted it out, which is what you want to see, honestly, from Fulte. It used to be a guy that would sort of implode on himself, and he clearly didn't have his best stuff, but he sort of kept the game close, kept him hung in there, at least a run until Freeman came in and was Sam Freemaning it all over the place. So,
And you know, Kurt, you and I were texting about it earlier, and you were like, yeah, but it's lefty-lefty. Snicker's, you know, compelled to do it. But Freeman's been terrible against lefties.
Yeah.
I mean, it's he's even delivering.
And that was very tongue-in-cheek. That was sort of
no, I know, but that's what Snitker was thinking.
He's like, "Where is Bobby Cox's bullpen book when I need it?" Oh, here it is. Lefty, lefty. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. Right, I do like no, but I do. Got, well, I do like Acuna at the top of the lineup, and you know, yeah. I mean, it sucks. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Ozzy getting hurt was not great, but he'll be back. I mean, that's exciting.
Yeah, Acuna kept hitting, too, on Sunday.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, that's great. I mean, I think it's, you know, we won that first game against the Yankees and then got blown out. We've won the first game. And there are games where we can bring it against these top teams, but then we just turn around and we don't have it. And our offense falters and we can't beat a good pitcher. So, I think this weekend, these two games are sort of an encapsulation of the whole season. One day we're great, the next day we're horrible.
But, you know, they knocked Scherzer around. I mean, they tagged him for a number of hits. They knocked him out after the sixth inning. Like, they did what they needed to do. If they had a bullpen, they would have been in a much better position to
Well, there you go. But the bullpen's part of the team. Yeah.
Yeah, the rainouts didn't help. And, I mean, I'm glad that they don't have another game that they have to. I was talking to my son about this today. You really don't want to get, at least they got this game in, loss or not, but I mean, to have two more games hanging out there with the Nationals where you might have to interrupt some road trip, you know, to go to National Stadium and play, you know, on a scheduled off day or something like that. At least they've only got one of those games hanging out there.
Yeah.
All right, guys, next up is fair or foul, and we're going to focus on trades from this past week. But first, a quick break. So earlier this week, the Indians acquired relievers Brad Hand and Adam Simber from the Padres for their number one prospect, Francisco Mejia. Ham, fair or foul? If you were the Braves, would you have done a similar deal?
Would I have given up Gohara, Soroka, Kyle Wright, Ian Anderson, and somebody else for them? I don't think so. I don't think we're ready to go all in on a rental. So I don't go for Brad Hand.
Well, no, it wouldn't have been a rental. No, you're getting Hand for at least next year,
December.
For a couple of years. Yeah, yeah.
Right. But so I don't think so. I don't want to go all in. I don't think we're ready. I wouldn't have done
that. Yeah, I mean,
deal.
I agree, right? So MLB Pipeline had Mejia ranked as number 15 overall in baseball. Soroka at 14, Kyle Wright at 25. This is not, you know, we're not even guaranteed to win the NL East. Like, they're just not here yet to give up a prized, to give up one of the crown jewels of the prospects to get bullpen help. They're just not there. They're not far enough along yet. It's just not time.
Right. Well, and it works for the Indians too, because his stock is sort of dropping. I read some stuff today. They sort of want him to move out from behind catcher because he's not
a good defense.
Yeah. Catcher. And so they've got some other catchers in their pipeline that they are sort of liking more. So it was sort of a trade from a value space for them that they could give him up. And frankly, they're not as high on him as they were before. So the thing that's tough, and granted, he is one of the guys that's ranked so high, but it's sort of tough when you go and compare any of these trades to what the Braves have, because you know, when you say, oh, they gave up their fourth overall prospect or whatever. Well, I mean, the Braves' fourth overall prospect is like the 40th prospect in all of professional baseball. You know, right. Not a lot of other teams sort of play in that area. So,
right. Yeah. The Padres
for tat were things.
Indians are 15th in baseball, right. You know, their farm system.
Right.
All right. So, guys, this weekend, the Mets sent closer Juris Familia to the A's for a bag of baseballs. And it wasn't actually MLB baseballs. It was those soft ones we use in rec league with our kids. All right. So actually the Mets got two very fringy prospects and $1 million toward international free agency pool. So Curtis, fair or foul, you'd have done the Familia deal.
Yeah, I think I would have. And I sort of try and go look. I mean, basically, it's like, would you have traded Drew Waters? Would you have traded somebody like that for?
I think that's too high. I mean, I think it would have been nobody.
Well, it was well, their 14th. The first guy, Toffee.
Yeah,
whatever,
Toffee
was 14.
I see 17. But
that's Dustin Peterson for us.
Yeah, and Drew Waters is 17 for us, and the look that MLB that I'm not to quibble with you, but the one it's that sort of, absolutely, I would make that trade. Bobby Wall is a guy who you're basically giving up Shane Carl. You know, I mean, that's sort of where he is. He's pitched very limited time for Oakland, and has not been all that great. So, why wouldn't you? I guess they don't have any of the international pool money to give up, but I would have gone out and thrown this together. I mean, I'm shocked that the Mets couldn't get more from out of Familia than that.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, we heard Kevin say that he thinks the Mets would never have traded Familia to the Braves because they're in the NL East, but I don't think that's it. I mean, nothing seems right about this trade. A week before the trade deadline and to have gotten so little, if the only reason they did it was they wanted to start not having that $3 million on the books as soon as possible. I mean, it's malpractice.
This, yeah. And Oakland,
trade. Oakland, just absurd.
Oakland took on all the money, but they're also saying that Oakland, might, if they sort of fall apart here quickly, that they might flip him and trade him back or whatever, you know, get him back on the trade market
trade him back to the Mets.
No, but trade him like what?
The Mets front office right now would do that.
Yeah, totally.
And if as long as Kelly Johnson was part of the deal. But what was the pitcher that we traded to Minnesota last year that they immediately then turned around and traded to? No, it wasn't Jules Shaken. It was somebody else. It was the dude that we got from the Cardinals. Sorry, this is compelling podcast talk, but yes, so they're potentially doing the same thing. So maybe we can pull him from Oakland for even less in a couple of weeks from now.
It would be interesting. Yeah, for me, like, of course, I would have done it. No brainer kind of move. But on the other hand, following the Coppolella John Hart travesty and the Oliveira travesty, I'm okay not having a guy who was suspended for domestic abuse on the team. Like, I don't want that drama, you know?
Sure.
All right, Ham, last one. Fair or foul, the Braves will play 10 games over 500 the rest of the way.
Foul. I say they go 500 the rest of the way. 34 and 34, or whatever it is.
It'd be, I think they have 66 games.
Oh, 33 and 33, right.
Yeah, 33 and 33. Curtis?
I'm going to say yeah.
Yes, they will go.
Yes, they will.
10 games over?
It's called fair or foul, Kurt, just for the...
Whatever.
Yeah, that's how we play it.
I go yes.
Yes. I go...
Safe.
Ball.
So I'm going to go barely foul, right? If the Braves went 38 and 28, which would be 10 games over, they'd finish with 91 wins. I think they're going to finish with 90 wins. I think they're going to be 9 games over by the end of these final 66 and end with 90 wins. So we shall see. All right, guys, next up, Shot in the Dark, our crazy predictions for the week. And we will start with our two listener shots in the dark. First up from Matt Kritzberg. And his all-star game shot in the dark, which was that Ozzie Albies would come into the game late, hit a triple, and score the winning run for the National League. Unfortunately, no. We covered this. Scooter Jeanette stole his at-bat.
Ozzie saw 3 pitches. That's all. It was just fast. It happened so fast.
Had that sweet ground out to second.
Yep.
And then the second shot in the dark for the National Series was from Captain Tamerica, predicting that the Braves would sweep the Nats, and 2 of the wins would be shutouts again. Unfortunately, that was not to be. All right, so thanks, guys, for playing. We appreciate it. All right, let's see how the 3 of us did. Ham, you predicted that the AL would score twice as many runs as the NL in the All-Star game and that Harper would hit 2 home runs in 2 of the 3 games in D.C. this weekend. The AL won 8-6, so no there. And Harper did hit a homer in Sunday's game but not in Friday's game. So sorry, Ham. Curtis, you predicted that Freeman would win the All-Star Game MVP and that the Braves starters would give up 6 earned or less versus the Nats. So Bregman of the Astros, of course, won the MVP. And Curtis, you couldn't even get those 6 earned runs with 2 games, let alone the 3 that they should have played. The Braves starters gave up 7 earned.
Well, it would have been 6 if Freeman hadn't sucked.
Right. No, it's true. That's right. You would have hit it there. All right. So I predicted that Freddie would best Bryce Harper in the home run derby and that he would accumulate more bases than Harper in the Nat series. So Harper, of course, cheated and won the derby.
Yep.
Freddie had 4 total bases this series, and Harper had 6. The home run late to Minter in Sunday's game did not help me there. So no winners yet for the month of July. So guys, here it is, all the marbles for this week. What do you have, Hammy?
I'm going all in on Acuña. I think he hits 2 homers, 2 doubles. He scores 2 runs and he steals 2 bases.
All right. Curtis, what do you got?
I have that we beat Kershaw and that the Dodgers starters give up 10 more runs than the Braves starters do in the LA series.
All right. And I'm going the Marlins are going to score 1 run or less across both games in Miami this week.
Well, may all of those come true.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, folks, remember, you get to play 2 each week. Don't forget to get your shot in the dark in before first pitch on Monday before the Marlins game. Send it in via Twitter. And if we pick yours, we'll discuss it on next week's show. And if you hit it exactly, you could win an ABT koozie. All right, guys, let's look at this week ahead. 6 games this week, 2 at the Marlins, 4 at home with the Dodgers. We'll look at the pitching matchups. First up, Sean Newcomb faces Jose Ureña and his 4.39 ERA. And then we finish up the short series in Miami. Julio Teheran faces Wai-Yin Chen and his 5.75. So not a lot of strong starting pitching going on for those 2 games in Miami. Back home for the Dodgers, Anibal Sanchez will face Kershaw and his 2.64. Next up, Folty versus Alex Wood and his 3.87. Game 3 will be Newcomb versus Ross Stripling and his 2.08. And then finishing up the week will be Teheran again, second start of the week, facing Kenta Maeda and his 3.12. So, Curtis, what do you think happens this week?
Well, hopefully it's the Stripling that pitched in the All-Star game.
Yeah, that's right.
He was terrible. We always watched Miami is such a weird place to play. We always seem to sort of kick it around down there. I'm going to go 4-2, 1-1, 3-1.
Yeah. For your shot in the dark and all, Hammy.
Indeed.
3-3, 1-1, 2-2.
All right, I'm going 4-2 as well, but we sweep in Miami and then take 2 at home against the Dodgers. All right, folks, that is the show. Remember, you can find us at Blog Talk Radio as well as iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spreaker. As always, you can also find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access all of our shows and to post in our comments section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.